You're now in the huddle with Coach Calls Timeout, the podcast that dissects the mind of a different basketball coach every episode. We uncover what makes them successful and how their story translates to your coaching journey. Let's unlock your team's potential together. Welcome to episode 21 of the Coach Calls Timeout podcast. It's Dan Jonker here. I'm fighting a bit of a cold today, but I'm listed as day-to-day, so it's going to take a lot more than this to keep me from doing the podcast. We're enjoying doing this and really enjoying the feedback we've been getting from coaches around the world. Besides, this cold has given me the radio voice that I've always wanted. Let's get to the show. Today's guest is head coach of the men's basketball team at Brock University, Charles Kissy. He shares his journey from police officer to women's coach to his current role of head coach, marketer, fundraiser, recruiter, community relations, do-it-all man for the Brock Badgers. He's turned the program around and achieved a top five ranking in the country. For anyone running a basketball organization, this is a great interview for you. Coach Kissy talks about creating a brand for his team and the benefits that have resulted. My brother Brian handles the interview with Charles Kissy. Let's get right to it. Oh, real quick. Today we're introducing Story Time with the Canadian Coach K. So stay tuned for a great story from a coaching legend. Now let's get to Brian and Charles. Welcome to the Coach Calls Timeout podcast, episode 21 here. And as Dan mentioned, we've got a great guest for you tonight. Charles Kissy of the men's basketball team at Brock University is with us. Coach, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me here tonight.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
You have a very unique story, as a lot of people do, but yours is different than most. You, after leaving McMaster University, I believe you got into policing and then got into the women's side a little bit and coached at the younger level and then up to Ryerson University and then finally over to Brock. Can you talk a little bit about how that journey developed and how you ended up where you are today?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think you hit them all. You know, I started, obviously played at McMaster and then left. I didn't really ever think about coaching, to be honest. I knew there were some things that I enjoyed. I loved teaching. Obviously I love basketball, but, just started out coaching, some young kids. I had a great group, worked with the Scarborough Blues. I guess that'd be 2004 and had a great group of young ladies who just, you know, wanted to work. And, you know, I was a young, fiery, you know, coach who just had an opportunity to try and help them get better. And I said thanks to them and their parents now, because they were a great group and sort of helped me begin my coaching journey. So, from there, I got some opportunities to, you know, when that was over after 4 years and they were all off to university, I got an opportunity to go to Ryerson as an assistant on the women's side under Sandy Poitier, who's the late Sandy Poitier. She's passed away, but she gave me an opportunity, you know, just to be in that world and learn. And, you know, we'd have some great chats and worked with Rob Wright and Georgia Levine at the time. And they were just, you know, good for me and just sort of getting going. And, you know, obviously throughout that time, as you're getting deeper, you're trying to learn. I had some great coaching mentors that kind of helped me along the way.
Were you a police officer at the same time? When you were assistant at Ryerson, were you a police officer then?
I was a police officer then, and then the next year I took over as the head coach on the women's side for 2 years, and I was a police officer then. So I think we had two full-time jobs, for those 2 or 3 years. So hectic, but, you know, you want something to do it, you get after.
What made the decision for you to say, okay, I'm going to leave policing behind and I'm going to do this full time and give it my all?
Well, part of it was, one, I was already giving it my all. So that was exhausting, doing it both. But I think, you know, after the last year with Ryerson, moving to, doing the apprenticeship with the Raptors that year, and spending that year around the organization and the pros and Coach Casey and his staff, it was just, you know, it just felt right. Something just kind of felt like the right thing to do. And I got an opportunity at Brock, and it was a decision, you know, 10 years into my thinking career. You know, like, the question was, do you take it? You know, one of those things that, you know, if you're, anyone who's got a sort of a safe in terms of, at least in the career, in terms of, you know, whether it be teaching or, you know, or policing or, you know, there's some jobs that are kind of viewed as, you know, cash for life because of their union status and those types of things. Anytime you consider leaving that, you know, people kind of get, you know, it makes people nervous, I would say, to do some things like that. I just had an opportunity that, you know, at the end of the day, my career in policing was great. The counseling service was amazing to me. You know, I don't have any complaints about that. I just had an opportunity that I just couldn't refuse. And listen, at the end of the day, you know, you take a chance and it doesn't work, you come back. Go back. So for me, it was pretty easy. And so far it's worked out.
So when you were with the Scarborough Blues there, I mean, I just finished coaching as well as my Mohawk team. At the same time, I was coaching my daughter's club team as well in Brantford. And I coached them through grades 5, 6, 7, and 8. We took them for 4 straight years, my wife, my brother, and I. So I did the same age that you were doing. What appealed to you, or what fun did you have with those girls? What did you like about that?
Oh, man, like, you know, anytime, I'd say one of the greatest things about coaching is that you get to learn a lot about yourself. You know, I think those young ladies taught me so much about myself, about my teaching style and how to become a better teacher. And, you know, really coaching at the end of the day, like most jobs, is about people. So, you know, I learned a lot about them. And then we just had a great time. We got to know each other pretty well. I mean, I still talk to both of them today. You know, so we're just good people. You know, we learn so much about each other. And you know, it's really cool. As you know, if you have kids, you know, it's just so cool to watch them grow. Develop with young people, just really interesting to see how, you know, what happens in the next phase of their lives as they're all working now and doing some great things. So, you know, this for me, the most fun was that whole journey, that process with them, just helping them develop and watching them grow, and then them helping me develop. You know, I think that's probably the most valuable thing that came with that for me.
I've told this story before in our podcast, but I enjoyed the difference. Like I'd go from a men's practice. We didn't do things differently from a basketball standpoint for the most part. I mean, we worked, you know, fundamentally, with my men's team. If I work, 30 or 40% on fundamentals, 60% on team, with my young girls team, I would work 75 to 80% on fundamentals and 20% on the team stuff. But the funnest or most unique thing with the girls was, the emotional levels were so different. I could have girls crying for no reason on the floor to being really excited and happy to not knowing what the score was. I loved every second of the 4 years that I spent with those girls. I think it's really neat.
The thing that, you know, and I never coached them differently. I don't know. I'm one of those that, you know, you hit kind of the emotional range may be different, but the emotion is still there. And I think when you look at, you know, girls, you just said, you know, your girls may cry for no reason, but the guy may be, you know, angry or quiet, or, you know, there may be a different emotion attached to him. And so I think it's very much the same from that respect. You know, I know a lot of people would disagree with that, but I think emotion is just what it looks like at the end of the day. And so, you know, that was interesting for me as I, you know, coached women and then took over and coached the men's team, and I haven't really changed that much. You know, I haven't really changed my approach to my players. I haven't really changed my approach to, I've grown and evolved, so there has been change naturally, but I don't think, you know, how I interact with my players and in terms of, building relationships, in terms of, you know, challenging them and pushing them in different ways. You know, for me, it's been more or less the same. I've been able to, you know, we had a great player at Ryerson, Ashley McDonald, who I was able to push the same way as I push our star Daniel Gotti now. You know, so it hasn't, they're both all-stars, OUA all-stars, it hasn't been that much different for me. So, you know, that's something that I look at, I find it really interesting, because we have a lot of debates around that, but, you know, I guess again, at the end of the day, it's all about people and it comes down to you and your own process and style.
Very good point. And that seems to be the common thread in all the coaches that we talk to, is ultimately a lot of your success is derived and built around the relationships that you have with your players. The stronger the relationships that you have, then the stronger you, the more you can push, and the more they'll accept coaching, and the more they'll run through walls for you. And it can't be fake. They need to genuinely see that you care about them. You know, I think that's a common thread from almost everybody that we've talked to.
Yeah, I mean, that's paramount. You know, I think you really can't, I just don't know how you drive the same way if you know, they don't respect you first. I always say that's most important. They don't have to like me as much as they have to respect me first, and they have to be mutual. And then you start to build that likability and all the rest for me. I don't need them to like me before they respect me. So that, though, you know, we sort of build that way. And then once there's that mutual respect, then, you know, for us, you know, we lay the rest down on top of that. You know, and we're able to go from there, because there are days, not everybody loves their coach all the time. Like, you know, if anyone tells me otherwise, I don't know. I mean, you're not winning, or, you know, I don't know, but, it's just not possible. You know, there are days where you don't like your coach, or you're driving them and they don't want to be driven, or whatever. You know, it's part of the deal. So you just try to find that balance. But I know at the end of the day, even though they may not like it, or they may not be happy in that moment, they know what you're about, and they have enough respect for you and vice versa to continue to deliver, right? So I think that's a sort of a fundamental piece in that relationship.
Now, you had a very unique experience in that you spent a season with the Raptors and got to be close with Dwayne Casey and his staff. Can you comment on this same type of thing at that level, at the professional level? Did you see the relationship building? And also maybe just talk a little bit about what that experience meant to you and the types of things that you got to do and see while you were with them.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, from that standpoint, I mean, again, it's everything. I mean, you want to be able to, now these are professionals, and it's a little different than that. It's a job. At the NBA level, I was saying it's a business, obviously, right? And so, you know, the need for a relationship, I would suggest, is greater. There's a lot of competing interest, right? Because it is a business. So, you know, people are wanting to win, and people are wanting to get paid, and there's different things that play. People want to play. You know, there's different things that play. But I would say the one thing, you know, with Casey and his staff, they do a great job just spending time with their guys and building relationships. You know, you see, you know, Casey with DeMar after practice or before practice, just, you know, chatting. I think those things are important for them. And they do a really good job with it. It's a business, so you have to find that, you know, you have to find that, some of those middle ground. And if ultimately, you know, you respect each other again, like I said, I believe that that's the foundation. If you could find that, then people will play for you. I think you look at Popovich, for example, the one thing everybody does is that they respect him, you know. And so for that, they play for him. So, you know, along with that, I mean, my experience was, you know, I couldn't have asked for, it's one of the things that have made me a better coach is to have access to learn. And so, you know, if you look at our program, the year after we're there, you know, we were 4-18 our first year and bottom 5 in the country, to 2 years later being top 5 in the country. You know, that had a major role in our progress, I would say.
So what opportunities were you given there, or were you a fly on the wall? How did that all come about? How did the opportunity present itself, and what did you see while you were there?
I think the biggest thing, initially, especially early when I got there, yeah, you just kind of sat back, watched, learned, like in any place, you know, you just kind of take it in. And then as it's been a couple of years now that I've, you know, been around and the training camps and so on, every year you just, you know, you take on a little bit more, whether it's workouts, whether it's, you know, helping out, with simple things. But really just getting to see how it's all put together, I think is the biggest thing, because, you know, 18,000 people every night get to see, you know, in the arena, get to see the finished product, but they don't get to see what goes into that product, you know, on the floor. And so that's really cool to watch it all get, you know, put together, from practice to film to scouts to, you know, coaches meetings, those types of things. And what are some of the things they discuss and what's important to them, and so on and so forth. So I think for me, just putting the whole product together. But one of the things that I definitely did there was take from everybody. So not just from a basketball standpoint, but watch how they, you know, organize their games and the events they create around their games. I mean, I would suggest that nobody does it better than the Raptors in terms of, you know, been to a few other arenas and they do a really good job putting on a show, I think, and entertaining their fans. And so you try to take from that too. I mean, there's so many smart, talented people there. You try to take as much as you can from everybody and all that. But because the difference for me is that I'm, you know, the manager of my whole program. Like, I have to do everything. Or be involved in one aspect or another of everything that we do, whereas for the most part, Casey just gets the coach, right? And focus on winning basketball games and building relationships with his players. You know, we have to, as CIS coaches, you know, we're fundraising, we're marketing, we're, you know, recruiting, we're coaching, we're doing it all. So, you know, while I was there, definitely try to take advantage of seeing how the whole organization puts it together.
One of the things I've been most impressed with your program is that you've not only went from, as you said, one of the kind of lower ranked teams in the country to now being nationally ranked, but you've also developed what I'd say is a brand, and your social media presence and your fans that have grown and have now followed you. You know, I don't think I trust or really see attendance figures from all the competing U-Sport facilities, but I would have to say that probably you and Carlton must lead the league in attendance. And for road attendance, I don't know that anybody has a stronger following. You've got busloads of fans that actually follow you around now. How did that develop, and was it a conscious thing that you've done? Was there a strategy behind it?
Yeah, I think, you know, after the first year, you know, you heard a lot about, you know, our fan base, and we wouldn't really, you know, there's some comments about, you know, how we don't really get very many fans, and, you know, there were some things there around that I thought we had the ability to change if we just planned a little bit and made a little bit more of a conscious effort, there, especially with, you know, in time with the Raptors and seeing some of the things that they do. And then, like anything else, you gotta find people. And we were very fortunate, you know, to find, a young man, Bowie, who really just started out saying one day, "Hey coach, I wanna, you know, come out to practice and watch." He was a student, still is a student at Brock. And, you know, he said, "Hey, I wanna come out and watch practice." You know, "Absolutely, sure. Can you help me? Can you," thinking about getting into coaching, he's a sports management student. And he just was really interested in being a part of, you know, what was happening. "Coach, I like what you're doing." You know, there were some people there, like Bowie, and it really started with him, who wanted to help. So he would come out to practice and he would watch, and, you know, he was, you know, kind of on the sideline. And then at the end of that first year, he said, "Okay, I know what I want to do. I want to focus on fan engagement." And that was it. I mean, really, it just came down to he took a plan. He's from Montreal. He went back home and said, "Hey, in June, I'm going to come back. We're going to meet and we'll talk about, you know, what we want to do for the year." And I said, "Great. Hey, you know, take this on." And then we started talking a little bit about different things, started plotting out our, you know, what we'd like to see. You know, we had, I can't even remember the ones we started with, but, you know, the home opener was one of the things we wanted to do. We were playing Algoma. We were bad, and no offense to Algoma, but at the time they weren't very good either. And, you know, we set out to sell out this game because we could, and we thought we could. And I know a lot of people didn't think we could, and, you know, we're just coming off this terrible season. And we structured it in a way that made it attractive, and we started promoting it. We had, again, teams. I think that was a red game. But we really put a little bit of effort into pre-planning. Yeah, and marking some of these things early and not having it be an afterthought. And then we made it a little bit of an event. We had mics and an announcer. You know, we just really, again, put some effort and some thought into how we were going to make this appealing to, everyone other than ourselves. Like, I mean, somebody had a great line that, "Hey, you know, we're going to go to this event and, oh my goodness, there's a basketball game that just broke out." You know, like, I mean, that we were now putting ourselves second, and we were sort of the sideshow. So that was kind of the focus for us. And so we started with that. We sold out our first game against Algoma, our home opener, with 300 people lined up outside that could not get into the gym.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was crazy. And that was the beginning. That was my second season, and that was the beginning. And then we just started to try and make, you know, things bigger and better. And every year we kind of added to it. And, you know, if you know me, I'm, you know, that wasn't good enough. Hey, how do we make this better? Hey, let's look at the Meridian Center. This is an awesome arena up the road. And that was the next thing. Let's try and see if we can play at the Meridian and sell it out or get as close to that as possible. And that began, and we just started trying to build. And, you know, and then we got team involved, and, you know, Robert Hilton from our university kind of stepped in, and then it just got bigger. Now we have this whole campaign. We are ready, and it's this thing that I don't even have to talk to anymore, because it's got a life of its own.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But now we have this great group. So one of the greatest things about our school from an academic standpoint is, you know, a sports management program. And we have such great minds there, both, you know, sort of from the academic side and students. We just have so many students who love sports, who love the concept, the events around them, and all those types of things. And they've just kind of banded together along with Ali, who kind of led that charge, and have taken it on, branded themselves, given themselves a name, and now, yeah, I'm it's one of those things I'm proud of, to say that we do have the best fans in the country. And, you know, we just really, I mean, listen, there's probably another school that was doing it fairly well before us. Not to the level of the fan engagement piece, but, and I'd say at Ryerson, I thought Roy Rana, before I got there, here, was doing a great job. Like, there was one thing that Rana always did well, was brand and market and sort of sell himself and the program. And I thought he's always done a great job with that. And I thought they were always been doing it before us. The only difference for us is we're not selling our gym out. We've added the fan piece to it. And we're doing it every day. We sold out their gym last year playing there and brought 200 people, you know, to their gym. So, you know, it's already been sort of happening, I think, in our league a little bit, but I don't know that we all make a conscious effort to really build it this way. You know, at the end of the day, I say this all the time. Listen, I'd love to just think that I can just coach basketball. You know, I wish, I think we all do. I think anyone in our league would say it'd be great if we just coach and do nothing else, but that's not our reality. And our reality is, listen, my reality is I don't want to play in front of 200 people, you know, cause that's not really fun. You know, so I'd rather play in front of sold out crowds with energy and, you know, electricity. I think when we're talking about a student experience, you know, that's what it's about, right? So why not? I want our athletes to play sold out venues everywhere we go all the time, whether it's our fans selling it place out or it's at home, you know, in front of our own fans. So that's an important piece to what we do, because it's part of the student experience. We have to make sure that we're providing that for people when they come here. That's one of the things we sell. That's one of our brand promises, if you will, right? That's one of our things, that you're going to play in front of great crowds to be the best fans in the country.
Well, I think it's imperative that somehow we get students back involved in this type of stuff. I mean, I'm 46, and when I was, you know, in my early teens and stuff, I remember going to games at Mac and to Waterloo and to Laurier, and they would have solid crowds, and it was fun to be at. And nowadays, kids, I mean, even when I played in high school, there was great crowds, but nowadays kids have too many alternatives to sit at home and, you know, stare at a computer screen or their phones. And I think it's awesome to get people out like you have, but you've not only, I mean, you've taken it to a completely different level where you've built something that it's an event and people want to be at the event. But like you said, when you can take 200 people on the road with you as well, I mean, now it's a whole other level. And I think, you and anybody involved in that has got to be commended. I mean, the trickle down's got to be great too. I mean, hey, you'd rather, you know, have a home crowd on the road even. I mean, it's got to help the energy that your players play with. I would think that financially, whatever extra money you can bring in, has got to help the program or at least athletics at Brock. So there's got to be a lot of trickle down to this, and hopefully you continue to sustain it
with your management program. Hopefully that's a big help too. I think it's pretty neat, and I haven't seen anybody else doing it at your level right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know what, it's different now, because I know that, you know, years ago, the games, I mean, people would talk about Waterloo and different places, Brock, people would say, you know, even at Brock, the crowds are great. And really, maybe we're not doing anything new, but we're bringing it back. I think that's the big thing. And then trying to be creative with how we do it. Social media is what it is now. Yeah, there wasn't social media 25 years ago, so I'm sure they would have used it, but there was. So now we have it and we use it, and we have someone dedicated. We have a person for our program, for almost all the programs I think at Brock now, who are dedicated to social media. That's their job. That's what they do. Right. And it's not, you know, me or, you know, one of our assistants. There's a student and that's their focus. Right. And so, you know, that kind of sort of deliberate engagement there is important. And that adds to, you know, someone to be able to just gauge crowds and fan engagement and those types of things. You know, it's a matter of a little bit of energy. A lot of it, I would say, can be done in the summer. You know, you can organize all this without having to worry about it during the year, because I don't spend any time on it during the year, right? But I know certainly I like to, you know, because it is something, it's a brand that we represent, so you want to make sure I do get involved. I am kind of hands-on, maybe a little controlling, because I want to know, you know, whatever it is that goes out, I think it represents us. So, you know, that's important to know and, you know, to sort of keep up on that. But a lot of it in the summertime, so that we're not, you know, not preparing for Ottawa Carlton, worried about how many people are coming to our game, because that doesn't really matter to me at the time that it's happening, right? So, yeah, I commend everybody at our place. They've done an amazing job. You know, I know my focus always to be able to just step away from it, and we're there. You know, our people have done an incredible job. You know, Robert Hilton sort of leads the group of students now. They've just done an incredible job, you know, running it and branding it, and, you know, we'll have a game coming back to the arena. Now, you know, like, I can say that yet, but it'll be big again, and it'll be crazy, and we're trying to put 3,800 people in there, and we'll keep, you know, filling it up. I know if you look at Ottawa Carlton, where they have that massive game that they do a really good job with, our league needs more of that, and I don't think it's a one or the other, or, you know, something that we have to hold to Brock. I think, you know, we set the standard, I think. And everyone should try to get on board and make it better. You know, like, you know, the next school should be trying to build off this and trying to improve it. That's what's best for our league right now. Or not, and we'll just continue to enjoy it, but.
Take advantage of it while you can. That's, okay. I mean, the other thing is too, you've got a product that, people, if they come and watch, will enjoy watching, and it hopefully will lead them back to wanting to come again. I mean, you've got a strong team, entertaining team. You're going to challenge for an OUA championship and potentially a national championship. So, you know, again, if people come out and see it, then hopefully they're going to be drawn to say, hey, that was kind of a fun thing. Let's go back again.
Absolutely. And that's what you hope. And you hope that, you know, kids come have a good time, and families can come and spend an evening, and, you know, students are loving it. I mean, yeah, that's exactly what you want. And part of that is we have to obviously make our product better, which I think we've done, and we'll continue to try and do. But it's exciting. When you come to a men's and women's game at our place, it's fun. It's exciting. And, it, you know, I always look at it when I go to the game. I kind of just step outside myself and say, is this something that I would want to take part in? And I could say yes.
Well, I wish you all the best the rest of the season. I appreciate the time that you've taken for me tonight. We always end each of our podcasts with something that we call a full court press. And I ask you some short one-word type answers and see if you can navigate your way through this press to end this podcast.
Okay.
Ready to go?
Here we go.
Offense or defense?
Defense.
Up 3, 5 seconds to go. Other team's got the ball. Are you fouling or are you playing it out?
Oh, that's such a good question. That's such a good question. We've done that so many times this year. We're gonna, if they can shoot it, we're fouling. If not, we're playing it out.
Do you prefer watching college or pro?
I'm gonna be one of the few, I think, that said pro.
Coach K said pro last week too.
Yeah, not a lot of people say pro because they think that it's not as fun as exciting, but I can say senior firsthand, man, those guys are really good. They're at a different level than these college kids. I don't care how good these college kids are.
Yeah, I
how
think
exciting the brand is. They're really good.
And I think there's kind of a renaissance in the NBA the last 4 or 5 years. The brand that people are playing now is more entertaining than it was through the 90s, especially in the early aughts. If you could be an assistant for a day for any coach in the history of sports, who would it be for?
Wow, in the history of sports?
Any sport.
Yeah, Coach KB.
Someone that we might be surprised that you follow on Twitter.
That you might be surprised. Sarah McLachlan.
And finally, I'll ask you the same question that I asked Coach Gunter at Waterloo a few weeks back. You come from the outstanding coaching tree of Joe Razzles at McMaster University. So all of these guys are currently coaching at the OUA or the OCAA level. Which one of these former Mac Razzo coaching tree guys would you relish defeating the most? Conley at Mac, Oliver at Windsor, Gunter at Waterloo, Giolametto at Redeemer, or Furtado up at Lakehead?
Well, would it be wrong to say that I beat them all already? They're going to laugh when they hear that. But except for Ollie, I guess, because he was off last year. So I'd have to say Chris Oliver, although he beat the rest of them. But the one I'd want to play against is actually Razzle himself.
Ah, very good. Well, you'll have to con him out of retirement, I guess, to do that.
That's right.
All right. Well, again,
I should have said, he's another big reason why I'm here.
Yeah. I mean,
I know I mentioned mentors and I have so many, but he's another big reason why I'm here. He's an athlete. He still comes to our game. You know, he'll send you a message about, hey, you know, this guy, you guys should look at this or whatever. He's still a big part. You know, when I started, it was kind of trying to be like him, to be honest. And then you kind of, you know, you find your style and you do your way, but he's been a huge inspiration.
He's been a huge influence on the OUA. I mean, you look at the amount of guys that are coaching now, and one of the things we generally do talk about in our episodes is mentoring, and we didn't do that with you today, but I'm glad you brought up Coach Razzo and obviously Coach Casey and and
Coach
others.
Chris Oliver, I mean, I have so many guys that helped me through my time. And so there's some of them are still in our league, which is cool, which is why I said, Razzo, it would be you. I'd get him back and play him one game.
All right. Well, hopefully he's listening. Maybe he'll do a charity game for you and put a team together or something.
Yeah. He's an alumni.
All right. Well, again, thanks very much for joining us tonight. And I wish you all the best in the remainder of your season. And go see if you can get yourself a national championship.
That'd be a beautiful thing. Appreciate it.
There you have it. Coach Kissy's doing great things at Brock University. He's creating a brand, attracting fans, and creating a loyal following. That brand means a lot to high school players looking for a place to learn and play. The best part is that Coach Kissy focuses on building relationships with his players. They aren't just there to win him games. They're there to be a part of a positive team atmosphere, make positive relationships, and become successful adults. Did this episode remind you of a coach you've had or a basketball experience you've shared with someone? If so, we'd love to hear about it. You can go to coachcallstimeout.com/stories to share your story. We're looking for stories about coaches who are creating fantastic memories for their players and help give them the recognition that they deserve and possibly get their story told on this podcast. Again, you can go to coachcallstimeout.com/stories to share your story. Here at Coach Calls Timeout, we're a basketball coaching resource built to help coaches improve their personal and technical skills. This podcast is designed to help your personal skills. Learn from other coaches' experiences about building relationships and what it takes to be a successful coach. When I say successful, I'm not talking about wins and losses. I'm talking about creating great memories for kids so they keep coming back to learn more day after day and year after year. We also help with the technical aspect of the game. The X's and O's, drills, running an efficient and effective practice. Our members have access to our video playbook with plays for all ages and skill levels. We also have video drills to help with skill development. Everything we do is in video format, and there's a reason for that. Other than it's a preferred method of learning for kids, Our videos show something that still shots can't: timing. Our video playbook shows the critical timing required to run a successful play. And the video drills give a visual description of how each drill works. All the videos are small enough files that you can send them to your players to use as study guides. The videos can also come with you to practices and games. Just download them directly to your phone or tablet. There's no other coaching resource like this. And best of all, we have a special offer for our podcast listeners. You can go to CoachCallsTimeout.com right after this episode and use the coupon code PODCAST when you're joining Coach Calls Timeout, and you'll receive a free 7-day trial to sample everything we have to offer. Just promise me one thing if you use this. Give us some feedback while you're in there. We're always looking to help coaches, and your feedback is vital to us. We'll be back again in 2 weeks to pick the brain of another great coach. But before we go, if you listened to episode 20 with Coach Steve Konchalski, you know that he's a Hall of Fame basketball coach who's been around for over 40 years. In that episode, he shared some great stories, and he has so many stories that we've made a new segment. And here's the first installment of Storytime with Coach K. Enjoy.
Back in 1999, and we had one of the better teams talent-wise in the Atlantic Conference, but we got knocked out that previous spring in the quarterfinals. So I'm in total recruiting mode, and one of my priorities was the point guard position. And we ended up with a great one in Randy Knorr, but at this point, that was not a done deal. And I'm sitting in my office, and the phone rings. It's a sunny, I want to say April, maybe early May day, and the phone rings. And this young man at the other end has a real southern drawl. And he starts asking me questions about our program. And I'm answering his questions, but, one by one. And I'm thinking, well, this doesn't quite sound right. Anyway, I finally asked him, I said, where did you get my number? He said, a friend of mine gave it to me. And I said, okay, that's fine. Anyway, the conversation went on. He continued to ask questions about school, academics, basketball, the usual. And finally, I just said, wait a minute. I said, where do you think you're calling? And he says to me, I'm calling St. Francis College in Pennsylvania. Anyway, I said, well, you didn't get St. Francis College in Pennsylvania. You got St. Francis Xavier in Canada. So I said, what position are you? And he says, well, I'm a point guard. I said, well, we're looking for a point guard. Anyway, long story short, I recruited him on a wrong number. I went down to visit his family down in Charlotte, North Carolina. The player's name was E.L. Adams, and E.L. came to St. X and was an integral part in our back-to-back national championship teams of 2000-2001. And in both championships, he made huge plays in the biggest games of the year. Eventually graduated, stayed in Canada, and became, I think he's taking out his Canadian citizenship. He's working with the Ottawa Carleton School Board as an educational psychologist. But that was probably the weirdest and most different recruiting situation I've ever been in, where a fella calls the wrong number, I recruit him on the wrong number. The bottom line is, he wins, and we win. And his line, eventually, later on, when we had a 10-year reunion, a banquet back at St. X to celebrate those back-to-back championships, his line was, it wasn't the wrong number, it was the right number.